Conference record has joined the conference.
Is everybody still there?
Yep.
Yep.
Oh, I'm.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Very
I'm
good.
Here.
Okay. So tonight's topical call, and thank you everybody for joining. If you missed the instructions when we started, if it gets kind of wild and crazy where you're at, you can click on *6 to mute or *6 to unmute. Is that right? Yeah, I think so.
One or the other.
Yeah. *6 to mute and *6 to unmute. So I'm Janine Feist. I'm the Director for Family Voices of North Dakota, and Missy Barranco, who is our coordinator in Dickinson, is going to help walk us through this topical call, and I'm excited to have all of you on board this evening and welcome you all. So, and we usually host these topical calls, which we've been trying to do them once a month or more or less, but tonight we're talking about helping families partner with health providers. So, and Missy is going to pick up, she's going to chime in wherever, and I've got a real sore mouth, as some of you probably heard earlier. So if I, Missy, I'll just kind of give you a nod or take over if it's feeling bad. So.
Yeah, or we'll just talk over each other. I was just going to say, too, if anybody has anything to add while we are, you know, just jump in. And when we do these conference calls, we often interrupt each other, and just because we can't see each other, and that's okay. Don't feel bad if you jump in and interrupt, or that's just how they work.
Sound good to everybody? They're probably all on mute.
Yeah.
So, first we're going to start with some principles that Family Voices has on partnering with providers. So the first one is that families and health professionals work together best in the best interest of the child when they're working together. And as the child grows, they become part of that partnership team. So in other words, as you're transitioning into adulthood, it's good to allow the child or youth to become part of that team, to be able to express what their needs are, as well as looking at the family unit as a whole, and that everyone respects the skills and expertise brought to the relationship by each partner. So that's just a couple of the principles from Family Voices. The other one, the next slide, is that trust is acknowledged as fundamental, and I really believe that that's true. And sometimes it takes quite a bit to establish that trust. We have we were lucky, fortunate enough to, from Janice Bielko, we have a training called the Dance of Partnership, Why Do My Feet Hurt So Much? And that's really, really kind of analogy, really a partnership in dancing on how difficult sometimes it can be, especially if you're dancing with a strange partner, that you have to establish trust first before you can get into the flow, because everybody comes to the table with a different language and maybe a different agenda. So it's real important to develop that trust, and it certainly doesn't happen overnight. Communication and information sharing are open and objective. We firmly believe that the more the family knows, the better. And a lot of times I'll use Carlotta McCleary. I don't know how many of you know her, but her analogy is that instead of informing a family with a slice of bread, inform the family with a loaf of bread. So communication is really important with the trust factor. The other thing is that participants make decisions together. Your healthcare provider and the family need to make those decisions together and partner in a way so that it's conducive not only to the professional partners, but to the child and to the family, and that there is a willingness to negotiate. So any questions on that, or anybody want to add a comment, Missy?
Nope, but I can do the next one.
Okay.
Unless if there are any comments, jump in. The next slide talks a little bit more about what Deneen talked about building trust, which often is built within relationships. And part of that partnership is really trying to build strong trust and relationships that healthcare providers can stand, so they can stand behind families and the children. And good relationships with committed providers obviously help relieve families from some of the stress. And I think, you know, one thing with relationships, often, you know, the longer we're with someone, the more trust and the more relationship. But I think, too, both sides, it's good to try to start forming that relationship right away, which isn't always easy when you're, maybe you end up having to see a new provider that you have a trusted provider or trusted specialist that you normally see and you have to see someone new. Sometimes it's hard to build that trust and relationship right away. But the better relationships you have, or the better trust you have, the better the relationship, and back and forth. And it helps also to provide support for problem solving. And I also think with the relationship piece, it's for one part on the parent's part is to really let the provider know what your family situation is. So they know maybe what obstacles or challenges that you have and maybe getting to appointments or scheduling maybe because of other children's activities or maybe the distance, or just other family dynamics going on. So it's up to us as parents to share some of that information, because without that, there's no way that they can know and understand some of those things. And I know as a parent, sometimes I get frustrated, and then I realize that, well, I didn't really share where I was coming from. And so how would they know how to, you know, help us with that challenge if I wasn't upfront and honest about that? All right. Do you want to just go back and forth, Deneen, and do every other one?
Sure. Okay. So the next slide is about reciprocity, and again, it's really all about the relationships, but families should expect quality care and responsibility from their providers and show them that they are responsible too. And it also works a little bit the other way around too. Families also need to show that same responsibility to the providers as well. So anyone want to make a comment about that one? No?
Okay. And I'll just follow up with that. I just happened, both me and I were in Washington, D.C. last week, and I was in a similar conference breakout session about kind of this topic, and the presenter was talking about a situation where a parent had gotten referred to them or to another parent for support because the doctor had said that the mom wasn't feeding the child, and that's why the child had failure to thrive. Well, the child actually had a G-tube and every night would pull it out. And the mom was having a hard time keeping it in, and so, but hadn't shared that with the doctor. And so the doctor made the assumption that the mother just wasn't taking care of the child like she was supposed to. And so once they were able to figure that out and the doctor understood some of the challenges, they were able to order equipment and different things to help the G-tube in, which, of course, helped the child to gain weight. And so it was just a good example of sometimes that communication and that relationship building, how that information is shared and then how treatment is provided. The next slide continues to talk about family professional collaboration, which again promotes relationships, which we keep talking about, in which family and professionals work together to ensure the best services for the child and family. A big piece of that is to recognize and respect the knowledge, skills, and experience that families and professionals bring. And so oftentimes, you know, as families, especially I think when we're new to this, especially in the medical field, we often look to the doctor or the medical profession as the expert and forget that we bring a lot of knowledge and information. And sometimes, like Deneen said, with the, you know, why do my feet hurt so bad? Sometimes we're trying to be careful not to step on each other's toes, and we do. And I know there's been times in my life that, you know, I'm hesitant. Do I say this because am I going to sound silly? But really the knowledge that we come as parents of our children is so important, and it's important for professionals to recognize that. And again, this helps to develop the trust. That's an important part of that relationship.
Okay. The next slide talks about facilitating open communication so families and professionals feel free to express themselves. And I think it's really important that that there is that open dialogue. There may be things happening within the family dynamics that you may not be able to follow through with a treatment in the way that it may need to be done, or, you know, that kind of thing. So families should both should be able to express the way that they're feeling. You also want to create an atmosphere in which the cultural traditions and values and the diversities of families are acknowledged and honored. And I think we're getting better at that, but I still think there's a lot of improvement that needs to be done in that area. And then it recognizes that negotiation is essential. For an example, if let's use therapy as an example. If you have a doctor that's ordering therapy four times a week and you're having, you know, it may be a hardship on you financially to do those therapies four times a week, or it may be difficult for you to get into leave work that often. So those are the kind of things that, should be able to talk, to discuss openly so that you can negotiate that maybe that it could be done two times a week or three times a week. And it also includes the acknowledgement of mutual respect of each other's culture, values, and traditions. And this actually was, we have a lot of materials here at our office and some online, if people are interested in it. Polly Arango was one of our former executive directors for Family Voices National. She and Kathy Bishop and Josie Wall developed a guide, the Family Professional Collaboration for Children with Special Health Care Needs and Their Families. And so much of this was taken from that. So if you want any further materials on that, I'm more than happy to send those to you as well. So, okay, Missy?
Okay. Yep, and the next slide is talking about understanding entitlements, and it's kind of just a good reminder about the importance. It says for to read your handbooks, but oftentimes, you know, medical facilities or any of the providers that we encounter in our lives have different sheets that you might sign or are handed to you about your rights and responsibilities. Sometimes it's written and sometimes it's more informal. It's kind of just assumed, but it's important to know what is expected, you know, what your rights are, so that if something's going wrong, do you have the right to appeal that decision? Do you have the right to say no to something? But also what our responsibilities are as parents. So maybe certain doctors have, you know, different things about showing up on time or canceling. And so to understand those responsibilities, but also to be, you know, build that relationship so they understand maybe your challenges in that. And oftentimes most of the providers that I've talked to and had relationships with, the more open families are with their situation, the more understanding they are maybe when something doesn't go right or that there's challenges because they can understand what's going on versus maybe sometimes if we just don't show up for an appointment and we don't call and explain what's wrong, they just think that we're uninterested or don't care and make those assumptions, which is important for providers to kind of find out that information too, but it's also our responsibility to try to share as much of that. But it also talks about, you know, trying to understand which services require referrals or prior authorizations, when and where to order medical and durable equipment, to understand how those processes work, as well as maybe if it's an emergency, which number do you call? If it's a weekday, maybe you go here first. Maybe your doctor gives you an email address or a cell phone number, but understanding when it's appropriate to use that, maybe there's certain times that it is and certain times that it isn't. And who to call with questions and complaints. Some just to use physicians, for example, you have to go through the nurse. Others, you can call them directly. So to openly ask them those questions, to build that relationship, to find out, you know, what works for them and what works for you so everybody's clear on how to communicate and get the best services and treatment for the child.
And one thing I'm going to add to that is on our website, on the Family Voices website, we have a care notebook on the website that is there and available for all families to download. And that is there to help you keep track of appointments and to keep track of medications and durable medical equipment. And some families have found it really helpful when they're using several providers in going between your primary care physician, a nurse practitioner, and then your specialty physician. So a lot of families have found that real helpful. It also helps providers when parents treat them with the same respect that they expect them to give, and they give them all the information that they need to give their child the best care and make informed decisions. Honestly and honestly express your concerns and listen actively take notes to help understand and ask questions when you don't understand. Sometimes, you know, if needed, it's helpful to take another support person in there with you. Sometimes I remember when we were going in between specialty physicians, it was good to have somebody else there, because I remember very clearly in those early days when providers would say something, it didn't always compute. It was like I was watching their lips move and it wasn't comprehending. So it was helpful to take somebody along with me so that we could discuss it, or they could jump in and chime in when I was, like, dazed and completely glazed over. So that's something that will also help the providers with families. So. Hey, Misty?
Yes? Oh, was there a question, or was that? Okay. The next one kind of just goes right off what Denise said, is how to ask questions. And what she talked about is, you know, keeping a record of phone calls and correspondence, make copies of everything. I often, when I get copies from the doctor now, I scan them into my and save them on my computer. So I always have easy access, because my computer is almost always with me, so I can look up notes or records that are sent to me. And so that's what's worked for me. We also, a lot of families keep a binder. So to find kind of a system that works for you to keep track of this, and then also to be persistent but remain polite. I think, you know, when you don't get questions answered, it's good to continue to ask questions. Sometimes it's good to ask that question in writing and get the response in writing, because then you have something that you can refer back to. I also think it's a good, as far as asking questions, when maybe something didn't go right. I think sometimes we are hesitant to let a medical provider know that, hey, this didn't go right. We had a situation at one point where we had a test done with one of my daughters, and the doctor called and said everything was okay, and then I got the medical records from the radiologist, and there was something on there that was to be concerned about. And so I called our doctor back, and he looked at it, and anyway, we went through this whole conversation, but because I was persistent about it, but also polite, and he ended up being really great after that and was very honest and open with me, because he knew I was checking stuff and I got copies of all the records and I read all the reports, and ended up being a great relationship. But if I would have backed down and not been real honest with him that I wasn't happy that he didn't share everything with us, but in a polite way, we may never have reached that point in the relationship.
You want to do the next one, too?
I think there's one other thing that's important, too, about asking questions is to, when your kids are with you, to teach them to ask questions for when they get older, if they're able to.
Right, absolutely. And on that, too, I think to start answering some of the questions, I know my oldest is 13, and so we started, and even with some of our younger girls, when the doctor comes in and asking questions, we will just look at them. Or, you know, we sometimes have told physicians or medical providers, you need to ask them, you know, when they're asking what hurts or how are they feeling or some of those things. And so they start being comfortable talking by first answering the questions. But also, like you said, it's important to have them come with questions. And sometimes even with asking questions, whether it be for parents or the children or anybody, it's good too to write those down. I know I was working with a parent a couple weeks ago who's going to the cities, and so for medical appointments, we sat down and wrote down all the questions. And some of them were very medically related to the child, but other questions were things that go back to a couple previous slides. You know, how do I contact you? Can I contact you by email? So we even wrote down all those questions so that, because we really felt if they were written down, we knew the mom felt comfortable asking them. But she said, you know, if she didn't write them down, she probably would just say, ah, it's okay, forget it. But because she had everything written down, she came home with all the questions answered. The next slide talks, on the other hand, of how to listen. And Dean mentioned, you know, how important it is to have somebody else with you. And that might be a significant other, your spouse. It might be a relative or a friend. Also, our staff often attends doctor appointments with families. It's just nice to have somebody else there, because it's often hard to listen to the doctor, be processing all that. Often the children are in the room, so that can be distracting, and trying to figure out what to say. And so often, you know, I'm sure everybody on the phone could say that they've left appointments, whether it be for themselves or their children, and said, oh, my gosh, I have no idea what they just said. And so to really be able to listen and so to kind of plan for that or even take a notebook so you can write stuff down and ask some questions on that.
Okay. And for providers, it really helps them when parents use their resources wisely, especially if there's a 24-hour hotline for urgent and not routine questions, if they keep or reschedule appointments, and really thank the providers when they like what the provider is doing. I think sometimes
I was like, is anybody there? I think I lost you. Okay, you're back.
Yep. So thank the providers as often as you can, whether it be your primary physician or your therapist or whoever. Sometimes I think that we often forget to thank them and help build that relationship. So.
And I think too, and Danine and I use a lot of personal examples just because, you know, that's what we often learn best from. But we have a situation where our daughter it's really difficult to draw blood. And we went to our local provider and she had the blood taken, and it wasn't very pretty, but everybody was very kind. And so I sent them a thank you, and it was just the lab department, and made sure that their supervisors knew, you know, so everybody got the thank you and how much I appreciated just their kindness and patience with the situation. And then we didn't know we were going to have to go back in a week to get more blood taken. And when we went back, they just immediately, when they saw us, they were ready, they knew what to do. And I really felt like because of that thank you, they really realized how important that was to us. And so we really didn't have to go through that whole process again. They just knew it and they did it. And I think if we went to step that thank you, we might have had to kind of go through the whole explanation again. And the next slide talks about what we should expect from primary care providers. And, you know, as parents, we have the right to expect that they see to our child's basic health needs and help to coordinate medical care, especially, you know, the routine and preventive urgent care and specialty care. And, again, it all goes back to making sure that you have that relationship so that they really understand your family, your challenges, the child's needs, so that they can help to make referrals and maybe schedule some of those appointments. Take care of prior authorization. Sometimes that can be very complicated, as with, you know, certain health insurance companies, maybe you only need prior authorization once a year. With Medicaid for out-of-state stuff, you need it every single time. So some of that stuff, I know in families I've worked with, their situations, we've had to help educate and provide information to medical providers so that they understand why we need this and why we're asking for it. But primary care providers can also help with the appeals process. So if insurance or Medicaid denies a procedure or treatment or equipment, they can often be very helpful in writing letters to help appeal that also.
The next slide talks about parents should really expect themselves to keep their primary care provider informed of any contact with other provider visits that they may have had, in emergency room visits, any specialty care that they may have seen since their last visit to their primary care doctor, so that the primary care physician that families have are informed and updated, so that they aren't ordering something that is going to contradict what someone else has ordered. So that's an important communication piece for families as well.
Which leads us to talk about care managers, which, you know, North Dakota, I think, and especially small towns, we often don't have access to care managers or social workers or people within the medical system that help to coordinate that care. But sometimes there's other people that might help that. For instance, sometimes program managers help. Sometimes some of the county staff through Medicaid can help. So I think it's important to be open with all the providers if you're struggling to manage all that care, so that maybe they can designate somebody to really help take that on and help coordinate that. And they can help sometimes be one of the best troubleshooting resources and trying to figure out how to get around challenges and through things. And sometimes even like our Family Voices staff does some of that, especially when there's appeals or denials going on. We can help to manage some of that and coordinate that with families. And they also can help to write care plans for parents and children and families and help with referrals and locating specialists, whether it be in another state or right here in North Dakota, but maybe another clinic or hospital.
We do have several right now through, it's a grant called the Integrated Services Grant, which eight providers across the state are involved in the medical home project, which there is coordination of that care. Devil's Lake has one, Fargo has one, Newtown, Minot, Jamestown. So some of the nurses are the coordinators that help with the medical home project. And in that project, they develop an individual health care plan, of which I think we could get some examples from some of those providers and be able to, if anyone was interested, what an individual health care plan looks like and provide that to those of us that are on the call. There's also, in the school setting, there's also health care plans, and on our website we also have an example of that for the school setting in the event that you want to utilize that to incorporate that in with some of the work that's being done with your IEP. So, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. In getting a care manager, now Children's Special Health Services does have, if you have a child that is in Children's Special Health Services, they do have two care managers in Grand Forks and I think one in Fargo. But if children are enrolled in Medicaid managed care, which we only have very few families that are enrolled in Medicaid managed care, parents should call that manager to get a basic care plan started soon after their enrollment in managed care. And I believe that was only being done at one time up in the Grand Forks area. I could be mistaken on that one, but I'm pretty certain. And I don't even know if that managed care organization exists. The other one that you can utilize is, I know that it's probably one of the better kept secrets, but Blue Cross Blue Shield, if you have Blue Cross Blue Shield, they do have case managers with that insurance department, but I do believe that you have to request that as a family to help you coordinate some care. So those might be a couple other options for you as well.
Okay. The next slide really moves into talking about effective communication and advocacy skills, especially when maybe you're disputing something, maybe it's with approval or authorization with the health insurance company for maybe a treatment or equipment for their child. And so just some tips on, you know, helping to move through that. It's important to really decide what you want to achieve. You know, what's your goal? Are you wanting so many visits for maybe therapy? Are you needing a certain medical equipment? And understanding, you know, thinking about why you want this one over this one and to prioritize what you want. It's also good to talk through it with somebody, and that might be a care manager, like Deneen was just talking about, with someone from there. It might be a social worker. Sometimes we do that with some families through Family Voices, and maybe it's just another parent and kind of talking through that. It's also good to understand sometimes there's things that we really want as parents for our children, and we really feel that our children need, but it's something that absolutely is written in a manual through the insurance company that it's not something they provide. And so sometimes it's good to understand what the limits are maybe with the insurance company. It doesn't always mean you still can't appeal and go through that, but to understand where they're coming from and maybe why they choose one piece of equipment over the other, and having those conversations and being open to hear their side of the story of why maybe they denied something or are saying, no, this can't happen, to keep that communication open. Often when we get defensive, people are more, especially providers and professionals, are more often going to tell us no just because we're defensive. But keeping that communication open, maybe they would, more than once, parents have changed systems and policies because they've been good communicators and really communicated the need. And sometimes somebody at that organization might say, okay, I'm going to take this to the top and we're going to argue this. And so it's really just good to understand, you know, why it's important and to help people effectively understand that. And sometimes we might find out that, well, we understand what they're saying and agree with them, and can still get a piece of equipment or treatment, but maybe it's not what we had thought we needed. So, again, it's all back to the communication.
Okay, the next slide is talking about people's interests. People often listen better when they feel that the others have listened to their interests, so it's real important to communicate and explain interests. The other side may not know what your interests are, and you may not know theirs, or may not listen to each other. If you want the other side to take your interests into account, it's really important to explain to them what those interests are. So really make your interests come alive. It's really your job to have the other side understand exactly how important and legitimate your interests are, and be specific. Part of the task of impressing the others with your interests lies in establishing the legitimacy of your interests. So you may want them to feel not that you attack them personally, but rather that the problem you face is very serious, and if they were in your shoes, they might feel the same way. Of others. So people listen better if they feel that you have understood them, quite honestly. So they might tend to think that those who understand them are intelligent and sympathetic, whose own opinions may be worth listening to. So if you want others to appreciate your interests, begin demonstrating that you appreciate theirs as well. So
with that, sometimes we're going to disagree with whether it be professionals, providers, systems. And so as with any relationship, it's important to just understand that there's going to be disagreements, but it's how we approach it that will make the big difference in how the disagreement plays out and whether or not it's resolved in a mutually satisfactory way for both sides. So some things to keep in mind with that is to maintain a respectful attitude towards a professional, just as you would want them to be respectful towards you, even in a disagreement. It's also important to find out the formal policy and procedures that help to resolve the disagreement. You know, it doesn't do any good to call the insurance company to complain about a problem if the procedure requires a written letter for concerns and recommendations. So you can always ask people about the formal policy, but sometimes it's good also to check maybe a manual of an organization or a business or an insurance company to make sure you have the most up-to-date information about how to appeal a decision, how to, you know, if there's a complaint, how the proper procedure to make a complaint. It's also important to use discretion about when and where you discuss your disagreements and who you discuss them with. Oftentimes, the people you're working with may be who you're going to be with for another 10 years. And so you want to, again, be just very respectful and not have, you know, loud conversations about what you think about somebody, you know, with other people there and other people listening, because that's not going to help to solve that disagreement.
So in resolving some of those problems, it's really important to talk directly with those that are involved about the problem. Check out the facts before drawing conclusions or placing blame. Avoid criticizing professionals in front of children. It may cause some confusion and conflict, and it can foster some arrogance, defiance, and rudeness towards adults. Kind of simply put, involve the person that you have a dispute with first and give them a chance to explain their perspective or their understanding of the facts and the situation before going up the chain of command. It's really important to check the facts with those who were there before drawing conclusions or allocating that blame. And think that, and if you must talk about the problem, try to do it in a way that avoids blame. Focus on the fact that you're going to work with that health professional to try to find a solution that everybody can live with.
Okay, and just a little. Another little slide on disagreeing. If you disagree, so if you have a problem with a provider, talk to, you know, if you can talk to the provider, do first. But then there's other people you can talk to, and we've talked about that already, like the care manager. There's often, you know, different kind of chains of command to go up. And so, again, find out that policy. Who's the next person to talk to? who should I file the complaint with? How does that process work? And it's going to look different in every entity that we are involved in. So, again, it's just important to know the policies and the procedures.
And in resolving disputes, Missy pretty much already said that, but if the parent can't prevent or immediately resolve the problem to their satisfaction, it's really important to call member services and then make a formal complaint. But you need to be very specific about what the complaint is. I know that at some points we've helped some families write a written complaint, and sometimes we have to help families bring it down to very, very specifics. Otherwise, you know, it could be pages and pages and pages long if we let it. So, and then if member services can't solve the problem in 24 hours, they might register that grievance, their plan by phone or letter or in a, depending on what the procedure is in any guidebooks that you might have.
Well, and on that vein too, and you kind of said it, but you know, we do often read through letters that families are going to write or send in or submit, and can help to drill down, you know, what really we want to say, as well as it's always good. It doesn't have to be. It could be a friend checking grammatical things, sentence structure, because the better something's written and the more concise, the more likely it's going to get a response. The next slide talks about advocacy, and being an advocate really just means doing what it takes, what's necessary to make sure our children get what they need and that our families get what we need to take care of our child. I think often people think of advocacy and think, you know, it's a fight or it's, you know, something negative, but really advocating is just speaking up for our children, and we can do that in a very respectful way and in a collaborative way and partnering with others. And so it doesn't have to be looked at as something negative. It can be a very positive experience.
Once she called her mom. Her mom called and said, step on her.
And you also might want to enlist other allies in advocacy. Again, other families of children with special health care needs can share their experiences and what has helped them. You can do that. And also their child's providers can be powerful advocates for their child, build good relationship with those providers. An attorney or other advocate can go with parents for a formal hearing, so take them. One example of that might be protection and advocacy. If you end up needing to utilize their services, they can be an important ally. Do find your trusted other to help you speak on behalf of your child with special health care needs.
Some other allies in advocacy is, you know, depending on how you're feeling within the situation, but we've had different parents that have worked on starting advisory boards within their medical facilities. Sometimes there's already committees or advisory consumer agency groups that you can participate on to help give feedback. Oftentimes you can start off with, you know, doing something positive to help build that partnership or that relationship on maybe something that went well and you want to share that. And then it helps to build that, so maybe if you can address some of the challenges that might be going on in the facility. It also, when you're on those committees, it's great because you can form some really great partnerships with professionals as well as representing the family's perspective.
Our next slide talks about children and youth with special health care needs and advocacy, and I'm a firm believer that that as our children grow up, that it's really important that they become a self-advocate no matter what developmental level that he or she may be at. So it's important not always to speak for your child. Let them do it themselves if they can. And then other than the child with and youth with special health care needs, bottom line is the parent does know their child best and are their best advocate, but don't be afraid to speak up for him or her if you need to. But I am a firm believer, and I started that even very young with my own kids, that they needed to be the one that was speaking up for what their needs were, and we did start that fairly early. And maybe, Missy, you can even share We had, at one of our family leadership institutes, we had Patty Hackett, who was then the director for Healthy Ready to Work. And her focus is on youth. So she provided some really good tips. And Missy, maybe you want to talk about that for a second.
Well, I think, and I can't remember how old our daughter was at that time, but I remember at first feeling like, are you kidding? That's going to be too much to ask. And then I realized, you know, listening to Patty and other things that really we can break it down. And so Patty talks about even small things like having the child check in when you go to the clinic, maybe presenting the insurance card so they understand that, you know, you have to, this is an important piece of that medical process. Having the child understand or know what medications they're on. And for some children, they're able to articulate that and answer the question. For another child, maybe it needs to be written down on a piece of paper. When the doctor asks, they can just give them the piece of paper. Or maybe it's on, you know, there's all this great new technology, things that we can do with eye touches and cell phones. And so maybe they're able to have a recording on something and push a button when somebody says, you know, what medications are you on, or have a printout. And so that it's, you can really be creative depending on your child's developmental level and maybe some of the accommodations that they already use in their day-to-day life to help really be participants in that. And I know we already kind of talked about the importance of having the child answer questions, or even Wilson would talk to her daughter about before an appointment and say, you know, what kind of questions do you have or what's most important for you? As well as starting to make some of the medical decisions. For instance, last year our daughter had another surgery, and we really left it up to her. It was an orthopedic surgery that we felt was really important, but we really wanted her to be able to make that choice at that age of if this was something she wanted to do or not do at that time. And so helping them to start making those decisions, because before we know it, they turn, you know, of age to where they can make those decisions, and then when they're out of our house where they really have to on their own, unless they still have the opportunity to have somebody with them. But it's really important at any age for them to start making some of those decisions. And I also think, which kind of goes into my next slide, the benefits of advocacy, you know, that when parents advocate effectively for their child's needs, this slide talks about how it could change a whole system to better meet a child's needs. And I have seen that happen with other parents who've advocated for something. You know, you think back to the day when parents weren't allowed to stay in the hospital overnight with their children because it was after visiting hours, and parents advocated for the ability to stay in hospitals. And now many hospitals have, you know, where our daughter has stayed, they have pull-out beds that you can sleep on and have changed that, and it was because parents went in. But also, I think, I really believe that when parents effectively advocate for their child, the child grows up seeing that and is better apt to start effectively advocating for themselves, because they've kind of been demonstrated and lived through seeing their parents do that for them. And so it's great. It's a great role model to kind of teach them how they can also do that.
Okay. So remember, keep the end in mind. Getting children and youth with special health care needs what they need today leads really to a successful transition for them into adulthood tomorrow. I know when Missy was talking about having providing her daughter with the decision whether to have a surgery or not, we also faced that decision as well. Our son Zach could have had at the time. Well, he still could, but decision was there on whether he would like to have implants for his ears or not, and we let that be his decision. Because he was really into sports, and some of the question was whether if he did get the implants, if he'd be able to continue with sports, and we let it be his decision. And he said that he has all his life to get implants, so he said that he wanted to live his life to the fullest. And this was when he was 11, I think. He wanted to live his life to the fullest, and he had all his entire life to get the implants, so his decision was that he wanted to play sports and participate as much as he could. So we let that be his decision, and he's still happy with the decision that he made. He's playing football at the University of Mary, so we're happy that he's happy, and he's grown into quite a successful, I think, young man. So, and more than able to speak up for himself. So, Missy, do you want to?
No, I don't think at the moment. Does anybody have any questions or any, you know, personal stories of something that they thought of as we went through this that they'd like to add?
You'll have to take yourselves off mute.
I have a question, and I'm not really sure that it's this, or I'm not really quite sure what to do with it, but can I share a story that we're experiencing right now, and I don't really quite know how.
Sure.
I don't know where to go next.
Can you tell us who you are?
Hi. Oh, I'm sorry. This is Erna Jacobschek.
Okay. Thanks, Erna. Yeah, go ahead.
Something that we're experiencing right now is Jaden is really crying a lot when they want him to walk. And I have stressed it over and over again. And sometimes, and for those of you who know me on the call, I'm grandma, I'm not mom. And I don't always get taken seriously. But I've always said, I think his shoes hurt his feet. And his last appointment, he literally screamed through the whole session, crying everything to not walk. Well, finally, the school said something today to the to my daughter that they think his shoes are hurting him. I don't know what I can do to get therapists to take me serious when I say, you need to check his feet. You need to check his shoes. And this has been going on for some time. They did find, at one point, they did agree to make him new shoes, but now the new shoes are causing problems too. It was good for a while, but now it's not good again. I don't know where to go with this. I just felt like I had to share with somebody tonight. Any advice?
Does anybody have any thoughts before Nina or I jump in? Any comments, or maybe I've had a similar situation?
Yes, Elaine, one of my thoughts is just I think it would be helpful for them to know that the school also sees a problem, and I don't know what their reasoning is. That they're insistent that those shoes should be okay. But having the school on your side, I don't think is a problem that would hurt.
Right, and I think that's one positive thing, and unfortunately that just happened today, so I'm definitely going to take that back to the therapist.
You know, go ahead.
No, I was just frustrating that he has to go through this torture until someone finally decides on their own. They don't really want to listen to what I have to say. They have to, but when they finally figure it out for their own, because I can't believe that it hasn't happened at school before today, because this has been going on for some time.
My daughter had some problems with orthotics, but fortunately she was old enough to be able to voice her own. So, you know, that's kind of against you there.
Right.
And, you know,
right.
He is voicing his concerns by crying. So.
Right.
Well, and the one thing that I sometimes, I don't know if you call it reverse psychology or what, but that I've seen that's worked with from children to spouses to providers is not necessarily by sharing exactly what you think the problem may be right away, but maybe saying, you know, he's always fussing like that. Do you have any idea why he would be doing that? I wonder, and kind of, gosh, I wonder what that would be, to kind of see where they're, what they're thinking. And sometimes they might have the same thoughts. Sometimes they might have a different idea, which maybe, yeah, maybe it is that, but then it starts that conversation and sometimes they'll say, hey, I think it might be this, what do you think? And then they seem more open to hearing what you might have to say. You know, sometimes I think as parents, we come in and we're just really gung-ho, and I've done this a lot. And then I think, oh my gosh, about what I think I want and how I think it should be. And it just seems sometimes to put up the defenses where they're not. It doesn't feel like I'm really being listened to. If I go and ask them questions, then sometimes they're more open.
And you have a valid point there. And I'm certainly gonna take a different approach with them. I think probably what upsets me most is when I do, or when it is suggested. You know that in the back of their mind, you just, I mean, there's just certain signals that are given off that you know. Certain things are said. Well, I've never seen him do this before. He's certainly getting a mind of his own. I've known Jaden for a long time now. Jaden does not throw temper tantrums, and yet people will insist that he does. And it always has to get to a point. It always has to get to this point. I mean, when they always think it's a behavior problem and that he's starting to show signs of behavior problems because he's getting older and he's getting frustrated. I see it differently. I see it, he's doing this because you're not paying attention when he whines. You think whining is a sign of behavioral problem, or you just say, Jaden, stop whining. And yet I know, because I know Jaden, he's whining for a reason, and now it's gotten to a point where he's screaming and crying because you're not listening to the whine.
Mm-hmm.
Other ways. Yeah.
This is Vicki Peterson. Hey, Erna. You know, one thing that I found that kind of works is just trying to get them to look at behavior in a different way, just kind of like you're saying, because, you know, in the schools and, you know, with your doctors or therapists, I mean, if they're having behavior is communication. So they're communicating to them, and make them look at it as communication and not so much as a meltdown.
Yep. And I appreciate it. I don't mean to take up all your guys' time. I appreciate everybody giving me input. I needed to voice it. I will take the feedback that you've given me, and I will take a different approach with them. I think I was just feeling frustrated because I know I'm pretty forthright. I'll say exactly what I think it is, and yeah, I want them to believe that I'm right.
Well, and you might try to talk.
Sorry, I am right. No, I'm not.
You probably are right. That's probably the truth of it. Yeah,
I know.
In our daughter's case, it was something that they said that she had to have, but she said it was just too painful for her to endure. And she did eventually manage to find a way that was a better way for her to deal with it. So, you know, maybe they can do some improvements. But I agree absolutely with what Vicki said, that they have to look at it as a communication.
Well, and typically, you know, I mean, when you think about it, all behavior has a cause. So if they're talking to you and they're saying, well, he's having a behavior, this is a behavior, okay, so what's causing it?
Right. Well, that's a good point.
Right. And, of course, and, you know, and I want to point out, Erna, it always seems simple. I mean, it's easy, but for us to give suggestions, but definitely when you're in the moment and frustrated, it's harder to process through that. And so, you know, it's always good. I'm glad you're asking the questions, and it's always helpful to process through with somebody else about how to respond and how to ask, because it's hard to do in the moment. It definitely is.
Thank you again, all of you.
Thanks for asking. Anybody else have any other thoughts or comments that they, as we went through this?
I just think that we had a couple of good spots of where we had providers that would really open up communication to, say, another professional and allow them to come in with our permission and our child's, you know, knowledge, and it worked out really well so that they were receiving some direct communication. It worked really well for us, and I guess that was maybe before HIPAA came around, so I guess you could sign off on it. But that, and we had other communications with physicians where they really were concerned and went above and beyond.
I asked her to try to help. Ellen has a hair appointment after school, so, like, if I'm home then and stuff, that they could come and pick me up.
Does anybody else have any other comments? Thanks, Elaine. That was a good. It's good to hear that it works well sometimes.
Some of the time.
Yeah, and probably more. You know, of course, we always hear about the frustrating, but it does work well. And when it does, we should always thank whoever was involved. Because they do work hard. Any other thoughts before we close? Okay. Well, we will be sending a follow-up email out to everybody with just a little survey on the call just to get feedback. It's always helpful to hear from everybody. So if you have any suggestions then, or if you think of something at that point or have a question, you know, you can always email us then too.
And also, this is Deneen, if there's topics that those of you that are on the phone would like to see happen, we're very open to any suggestions that anybody has, and we're happy to accommodate as well. So make sure that if you have suggestions to let us know.
Erna, I'm going to make a suggestion, and only because people are going to probably laugh because part of my job is computers, but I'm mainframe technology. I'm old school technology. I'm not all this new iPad technology and stuff. I would really like somebody to teach me how to use that effectively, because I think it would be something great, a great tool at some point, maybe not today, but at some point for Jayden. That sounds like a lot of people have experience with it.
Yep, that's true. And there are some different workshops going around that I've seen that have some technology pieces. So, you know, watch for some of those. But is there a specific technology you're wanting, Erna, or just in general?
Specifically, I want to know if there's a way, if somebody could show me what they do or how they use it or how their child uses it to communicate. Yeah. I would like to be able to find a way to use it as a communication tool.
Okay.
For Jayden. And so that's just where we're at right now. And I know we're doing the Go Talk right now, but I'm hoping at some point we can go from – I just feel like I need to educate myself in that area so that I know and can make it – you know, can help make that determination if he will ever be ready for it or when he will be ready for it.
If you want to get started, Erna, I could help you out with that. This is Vicki. Because Aaron uses, he doesn't have the iPod, but he has the iTouch, and, I mean, similar applications could go on that. So.
Okay. I will have to find time to schedule with you then, right?
Yep.
Or just,
but it would be, with you, it would one be of fun the... to have a topical call on, you know, applications that you could use for your devices, for a communication device, or... You know, how you use them for academics, how you might use them for, you know, when you're going out to a restaurant. You know, I mean, you can use them for all kinds of things. It might be kind of fun to have somebody.
The school gave me, they downloaded some things that they were using. And Vicki, you know that I just invested in a touchscreen computer because the school was using a touchscreen computer, and I thought, oh, great. And so I sent a flash drive so she could download what they were doing. And I have to tell you, Vicki, I'm so disappointed, so very disappointed. It was not at all what I expected them to be doing. And so here I am, back to square one again.
Vicki, do you want to check with, you know, think about who maybe a good person would be to do that presentation? And
probably be Mark Copen.
Okay. Do you know him well enough to see if he would be interested?
I've met him a few times, yeah. I mean, I could send out something and see what he says.
Yeah, maybe if you're okay with that, and let's see what he says and see if he'd be interested in doing one in the next month or two.
Is there a way to do, like, a go-live meeting where we could have a visual to actually watch what he's doing? Or
we can ask.
Okay.
He's very
and I don't know if it's still – I know there's a couple of sites that offer it free, so.
Right. We can check in.
No, in the call. They know I'm on it.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you all again. It was. I'm really glad I joined. Thank you.
Thanks, Erna.
Thanks, everyone.
Everybody. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. It was so good.
The leader has disconnected. The conference will now end.